We love supporting and promoting the creators of musical theater throughout the world, and we would love to have your support as well. Go to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the Become a Patron button, because a supportive community is a strong community. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. Now, whenever I have a guest on the show, I do my research. Any host worth their salt does that. And then I give a little bit of intro about them. I might say, but my guest today has directed and written sold out cabaret shows for Tony Award nominees and winners, has sold out Feinstein's 54 Below twice with his debut cabaret, or has their own podcast, Gay Card Revoked, or currently serves as the A&R director and in-house designer of Broadway Records. But I think I will just quote the first line from their website's about page. Robbie Rozelle does jokes. Now the gauntlet has been thrown. The audience is going to be expecting this. Can they live up to the challenge? Let's find out and welcome Robbie Rozelle to the show. Robbie, hello.
Thank you for that mediocre welcome.
That's what I'm paid the big bucks for.
the medium dollars.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Well, thank you for coming on.
What a joy.
So I always ask my guests, to give us their 30-second bio, because we want to know who you are. Not everybody's going to know. So who is Robbie in 30 seconds?
Ooh, okay. I am a Sagittarius. I'm a Charles Nelson Reilly with a Paul Lind rising. I believe musical theater saves lives, and I am occasionally very, very funny. And I'm a semi-hit cabaret sensation in New York City. How many seconds are left?
You got lots of, do you have anything else? You have like 9 seconds left.
And I created Playbill Pride.
Perfect. That fills up the 9 seconds. Awesome. No, I think everybody wants to know, and you don't have to tell us, when in December are you?
Oh, November 27th.
Oh, you're one of those Sagittarius.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen though, I'm making my Birdland debut this year for my 45th birthday.
Yes.
Yeah. I was born in 76. And I'm a SAG, just and I apparently own all that. I don't know, because I don't know anything about the moon.
I'm at the opposite end for Sagittarius. I'm
okay.
19, so you know.
Oh, so you go into whatever's after a Sagittarius?
Yes. Yeah. Sure. I don't know.
You know what? That doesn't matter. You know what matters? Jerry Herman songs.
Exactly. Now, hey, if they could create Zodiac around composers.
Gee, I feel like they have. World? Have they not? They really should.
Know.
Somebody should. Musical Theater Radio, that is the task for your social media.
Is a rebrand the 12th? Yep. Or do we go with the 13th? Because they added a 13th or something.
There's
like
a 13th?
Yeah.
2021 is too complicated.
Oh, no. This is like 2018 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
But it's still, time is a flat circle.
It is. It is.
There's a 13th. That's like Pluto's no longer a planet. But by the way, here's the 13th sign that nobody knows about. And the birthstone is just nothing.
Yeah.
Good for you.
All right. I'm going to have to look into this.
Yeah.
New musical Zodiac and figure that out.
I feel like that's like a good little social media thing for you to do on the side.
Well, thank you. And now I have more work to do.
Could go viral. You could have to get a shot on like Laura Osnes.
Man.
Yeah.
All right. And I'll have to always come back to you. So yeah. when I get my my, you know, Zodiac Tony Award, I will you know, I'll give you a little Carol Burnett ear tug
and it'll know Zony it's Award.
So Robbie, now that we've got into all this stuff, when you were growing up, were you always in a musical theater? Or is that something you discovered later?
Oh, so I fell in love with musicals, I think the way that most kids my age did, and that was through movie musicals, specifically Annie. Annie was my gateway drug to bigger and better things. And then it was like The Wizard of Oz and The Sound of Music, because those in America, they air around holidays and they become like family affairs, right? And I'm the oldest of seven children, which is too many, frankly. And so we were sat in front of a television at all times, because that is an electronic babysitter. And so I saw like Annie, but specifically The Wizard of Oz was always on around Thanksgiving, and The Sound of Music was always on around Easter because nuns. And they go hand in hand. You know what? Running away from convents is Easter.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. That's canon. So I would watch these. And like I did like school theater growing up, but it was like I was the father in The Night Before Christmas in kindergarten. Have no memory of that, just a Polaroid. Things like that. But then in eighth grade, we moved and I changed school districts. And I was like just a little, I was very thin. I was semi-effeminate. And I sang a lot. I sang everywhere all the time, which was not the smartest thing growing up in upstate New York. but one day I saw a poster on the wall, and it was like auditions for the High School Musical. And it was a picture of the film of The Wizard of Oz. And I was like, wait, I know that movie. I could be in that movie. Because, you know, theater is a movie. and I auditioned eighth grade. And I was cast as the Scarecrow. So I got a lead over many a senior who were very angry at me. But it helped me truly like find my people and like where I needed to be. Yeah. Thank God it found me, because without it, who knows what would have become of me. Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So that's how I discovered theater.
Great. When you discovered theater, you decided at that moment, this is what I'm going to do? Or was there something else? I'm always curious when I talk to artists, is there anything else they thought about doing in their life?
Oh, yeah, for sure. In like fourth grade, I was going to be a teacher, which would have been disastrous because I have discovered in later years that I truly detest children in all forms. No, I like babies. Okay. But like 2 months in, I'm like, you take it back. Take it. Do you want this? Come back to me when you're 28. You're through most of your problems and you can have a drink with me.
But there's 20-year-olds through their problems?
Unclear, but I'm 45, so I'm just guessing. I was through most of mine at 28.
Yeah.
I don't know. but I thought I would be a teacher for a long time. And there was also a period, because I had seen the film Guys and Dolls, where I joined the Salvation Army. Because I thought, oh my gosh, people just sing to you all the time. And that's not how it works at all. That's just a fun fact for your listeners.
I'm glad you didn't see Sweeney Todd.
Oh, truly. Could have been a barber / pie maker. Honestly, I bake now. Took it up during the great pandemic of 2020. And I make very good sourdough, because what do I like? A trend.
Nice. <Yeah. laughs> Forge your own path there.
You know what? Forge, somebody else just take me to where the path should be, and I will walk down it happily. Nice.
So after you decided to go into theater, did you go to theater school or did you just jump right into the real world?
So I kept doing theater through high school. I wasn't cast a lot in roles, which was fascinating considering where I ended up and what I ended up doing in my life. I was always sort of backstage. I did get cast in Inherit the Wind, and I played, I don't know what the kid's name is, Howie, something like that. And like the other kid dared me to like eat a French fry as I'm walking off stage. Like they were worms. Ooh, I got a worm. It's like something about fishing. I don't remember Inherit the Wind, Scopes Monkey Trial. Yeah. Read a book. So I did, because I was 13 and I was getting like $500 for this. And the director grabbed me, like as soon as I got off stage, truly grabbed me and was screaming at me. I was bawling because what did I know? I was nobody, truly.
Yeah.
Thanks for the $500. that was more than I ever got in my life. I bought a bike. and he was like, you'll never work again. You will never do anything again. And now he's dead. And but I So, but because of that, I thought, oh God, well, I'm fucked. So I started my own company when I was 16, like a theater company directing, because I really was like, this is what I like to do. I see things, I see picture, like stage pictures, and I can motivate. And so like when I was 16 years old, I directed a production of Agnes of God.
Of course.
Because really that's what all 16 year olds gravitate towards. Could have been Grease. No. Pregnant nun, possibly impregnated by God, was where I went. Obviously big fan of Jane Fonda and Amanda Plummer. So I did that, and that was sort of the path I was on for a long time. I didn't go to college at all, which in retrospect, I'm kind of thrilled about, because I don't have to pay any student loans.
Yeah,
yeah, right. TKTS was my tuition. It was my college. It was my quad, nice. You know. So because of that, I learned by doing. And so everywhere I went, I would immerse myself in like the local community theater. And that's when I started working with a now defunct musical theater label called Finsworth Alley. Because I had this weird encyclopedic knowledge of musicals and like songs and singers. So they were going through a transition, and Bruce Kimmel was no longer with them. And I got a call, hey, would you like to interview so-and-so and talk about like their career and also like their album that's on our label? And it was these amazing people. It was like Betty Buckley and Jerry Herman and Elaine Stritch, which is a wild story. But because of that, like, it just was something I was doing, and how I truly landed in the New York theater world. And that was like when I was, I don't know, 25, something like that. 2002. It was a weird time.
So you've obviously been, you know, doing interviews and things like that for a while now. How sure. Do you remember that first one, and how much you've changed?
Yeah.
Since then?
I wish I could tell you exactly who the first one was. I feel like it was Christine Andreas or Michelle Nicastro. It was a lady, yeah. Which is great, because I gravitate towards like lady solo albums a lot. And so it was definitely one of them. And the first few questions, they were sort of feeling me out. And I was like, tell me everything about Fields of Ambrosia, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then they were like, oh, wait, you get me. And so like, the Christine Andreas one sticks out because it was like a 2-hour just dialogue between us and I don't think that my interviewing style has changed so much since then, because it's always just been like two pals chatting. Right. And it's basically what this is and what podcasts have become, good ones.
Yes.
You know, there are people who will have their stock questions, and if you say something interesting, they will just ask the next question.
Yes.
Does not matter. And I listened to an interview recently where somebody is talking about a song that's on an album. So the song was written for you about coming out to your father. And the guy was like, oh, actually, it wasn't written for me, and it has nothing to do with my dad. And his next question was, how did your father feel about that song? Just clearly scripted. Like, what does that do? It's just so interviews are just it was, you know, slightly famous people talking with more slightly famous people.
No.
I was not famous at all. But like, and they would be set up in the weirdest of ways. And like, we did Elaine Stritch's Sail Away. The London, we did like an interview about it, and she was touring at the time with Elaine Stritch at Liberty. And I had to call her at 11 o'clock her time, San Francisco, which was 1 a.m. New York time. And so, yeah. And in those days, kids, we didn't have the Zooms, all we had was a telephone. And we had to plug a tape recorder into the telephone, like Linda Tripp, to record the call. And here's the thing. Her assistant never told her about this interview. So I call the hotel room, blah, 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 please. And she answers. And she goes, hello. And it's 11 o'clock at night. And she's not expecting this. And I'm like, hi, Robbie Rozelle calling from Finsworth Alley for the interview. Blah, blah. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. But then talk to me for an hour and a half was delightful.
Wow.
Truly delightful. And at the end of it, she was like, well, I'm glad this happened, sweetie pie. What a dream. And it's 2:30 in the morning. I'm bleary-eyed, sweaty, and terrified because it's Elaine Stritch, who didn't know I was calling. I'm guarantee you, well, she wouldn't remember it now because she's dead, but she wouldn't have remembered it 3 days later.
Yeah.
But it happened, and I have it on cassette. Wild, you know.
What a consummate, what a professional.
Come
like,
on.
That's like those are the type of people that you want the industry to reflect. Not the ones, and you've probably dealt with a number of them. And again, you don't have to say who, but people who just been nightmares to try and interview because it's like pulling teeth, or they just are boring.
Like, yeah, you know,
whatever.
It's always interesting. Like the people who give one word answers. No, right. And you are taught. I say that in heavier quotes to ask open ended questions so that they can't say no, and they just go no, or yeah. And what do you do with that? Like, you don't want silence left. And so you're like tap dancing around it all. What? Yeah. I like the interviews that I like to call slow cooker set and forgets, like a crock pot where you just turn it on, you hit record and let them monologue.
Yes.
Agreed. It's so easy, right?
I know. You're please, like, oh, please keep telling us about that.
Please regale us more. It's, I think, but often those become wildly boring because you're like, are you just reciting from Night Mother or what is that from?
Well, yeah. You are the very first person, I think, in all my interviews to mention Linda Tripp. I will have to say that.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I know. Surprising.
I'm watching Impeachment at the moment.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The Ryan Murphy series with Sarah Paulson and Beanie. Sweet Beanie Feldstein. And so she's in the back of my mind, but also, yeah, I had that tape recorder that had to plug into your phone. Landlines, kids, which were a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, so,
I was going to say, I just finished some auditions and the artistic director says, because my job was to let them know we're going to give them a call and between 7 and 10. And I said to him, do we have to explain how the phone part of their cell phone works? Because do the kids know how that works? The
right.
Buttons and numbers and like it rings. They're like,
oh my gosh,
what?
you used to have to put your finger into a hole that corresponded to a number and turn the whole thing. But when I was growing up, that's how it started. And then they had push buttons. Ugh. And that was a revelation. So now to just have a mini television that you put up to your ear is like, what is this world?
Well, my parents still have a rotary phone with a 30-foot cord in their kitchen. And I love it.
Is it ringing? Are people calling it?
They do. That's their only phone. Well, they only got a cell phone like 2 years ago. So that was their only phone. And
Canada.
We just discovered cell phones a couple of years ago.
Oh, gosh.
Surprising. Yeah, because I'm on Zoom. I'm like the top 2 or 3 people in Canada who know how to use technology.
You are in the 1% of creators in Canada right now.
It's crazy.
Wow. What a gift for you.
Yes, thank you.
What a time to be alive.
All right, so let's try and get back on track because I'm pretty sure nobody's interested in rotary phones.
Certainly not in America.
That's right, because you guys are way ahead of us with your cell phone technology and your tape recorders.
Your 5G recorders. And your brain cancer. Yeah.
I'm recording all of this on reel to reel right now.
Good, good, good.
Yeah. So you Mm-hmm. When you were doing, you started your theater company. Was that wasn't in New York City, right? That was
no, that was in Binghamton, New York.
Okay,
which is about 4 hours away from New York City. And I started coming into New York. My first boyfriend liked musicals, and so we would get on a Greyhound bus for 4 hours and come in, go to TKTS, and find tickets to something. And that's how I discovered, like, oh, like, people do this. This is not just like a high school thing that maybe if you're lucky, you get a credit for. Okay, wait, this is something viable. So, and my first Broadway show was the 94 Grease, quickly followed by Damn Yankees and How to Succeed. Both of those were, it was like revival heavy for me in the 90s. Yeah. But it like was life, truly life-changing. And, you know, and we would come in and spend the day, and I am a vast collector of media. So we would go to a store that's now defunct called Footlight Records, that was in the East Village. And somewhere I have a photograph of me holding up my very first credit card in front of Footlight Records, because I maxed it out that day. So Footlight Records was a music store. You would go in and they would have these big wallets of that held CD covers. They were all in alphabetical order, and you would flip through them and say, I would like this German cast of Sunset Boulevard, please. Right. And they would just go into the mysterious back and come out with like 20 things that I bought that day. But because of that, like, I was, again, an avid, rabid collector of theater music, which is why I have the crazy encyclopedic brain where I can go, oh, do you remember on Tim Draxel's album? Tim Draxel was a cabaret singer in the 90s from Australia, and you could not buy his albums here. Fun fact. but I can do that because I collected for so long and still do. Yeah.
What's your favorite rare one in your collection?
Oh God, favorite rare album in my collection? Yeah. Probably the National Theater A Little Night Music with Judi Dench. It is, I don't know if you've ever heard it. Vastly different. Sondheim reworked some stuff and like put in two cut songs.
Wow.
Yeah. My Husband the Pig is in there. And he rewrote The Glamorous Life. So it's part the Broadway version and part the film, like woven into each other. It's wildly out of print, and I will Dropbox it to you.
Is it, do you have it on LP, CD, cassette?
No, CD. Okay. I have a lot of LP in here, but of course they that production was in the 90s and they weren't doing vinyl anymore. Now it's back.
Yeah.
Because everything old is new again, and I'm thrilled. I just actually fixed my record player at home. It's a state-of-the-art machine, and I had to tape a quarter to the top of it so that it had the weight to fully play and not skip.
Nice. Yeah, I had to buy. Yeah, I have so many albums downstairs that, of you know, out of print stuff that will never be on CD.
Yeah,
and like
it's nuts, right?
Yeah,
and so I also have like in my collection, I have The Wiz. Original Broadway cast album, which that's not rare. You can go to eBay right now, and I guarantee you for $1, you can buy The Wiz. Yeah. However, inside of it is 33 and a third, whatever the smaller one is.
The 45. You know
what I mean? Yeah, so 45, which is my age, famously. I said it at the top of the show.
Full circle.
And comedy comes in threes. But there's a special DJ mix of The Tornado that was only released to DJs that was inserted inside of it. Yeah. So that's wildly rare.
It's a dance version of.
Yeah.
Oh my, I want that. I know. Wow.
I can probably figure out how to attach the laptop to my famous top of the line record player with the quarter on top of it to rip it.
Wow. The reason is I have a show, as we go off on tangents, I have a show Saturday nights called The Saturday Night Party, and it's 5 hours of party music. So it's all the dance songs and the party songs from the musical theater canon. And that would be such a fantastic
event. What do you just play like Helen Reddy's Surrender Remix? Or
I play
Like, I play a little bit of everything, from Daddy Cool, because that has so many good songs with Rasputin and that sort of thing. And just different remixes and things like that. So I take some of the original cast recordings and some of the remixes of them, and just 5 hours of party music. And I think that would be so awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yep. I that's my favorite 5 hours on my station by far. Because it's just party songs that you sing and dance and move to. And
you all heard it here first. This interview, nothing. The party songs for 5 hours is where it's at.
Yeah.
Turn me off.
No, tune into this and then come back in 9 hours.
Come for Roselle, stay for party music.
Exactly.
I get it.
Yeah, the one rare album that I would love to find is FMA, Falco Meets Amadeus.
Oh.
Which is, because it's all Falco music.
Yeah.
And I love that stuff, but it's so rare in German.
Yeah, I don't have it. It is German.
It's very German.
When Playbill, because I used to be the creative director there, shut down their radio station for like 5 years, underneath my desk was a massive box of vinyl of everything that they had for the radio station. And I took it all because like they were going to scrap it. And I was like, no, which is like how I have a lot of like these, like all the Ben Bagley albums and things like that. Which are now being released on CD, but were not at the time. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's transfer into you at Broadway Records then. Let's talk a little bit about that. So you're the A&R director, and you do the I have it written down. Design the CDs.
I design all the packaging, basically. Right. Yeah. So I am the A&R director, which means artist and repertoire. I scout albums and singers. So I go to a lot of shows and say, oh, we should really record this. Or I will see a singer who I like and go, hey, have you thought about making a solo album? Which is like currently I'm recording an album with Patty Murin and Colin Donnell. That's like half duets and half solos for each of them. And that's sort of how like Jessica Vosk's album was born through that, stuff like that. And the flip side of that is I also design the packaging for them. So it's sort of a twofer situation, which is great for the producers of the record who bring it to us because they're like, we just have a smiley face stick figure. Can you make this something?
Yeah, because I play a lot of Broadway records because I went to your design website and I'm looking at all. And I looked at all the album. Like I went somewhere else and I saw all the covers and I was like, yeah, these are fantastic. How do you decide when you're creating those?
Oh, so sometimes it's very interesting because sometimes it's dictated, right? A musical has their key art. Once on this island, had their key art, and they said, "Here it is. Turn it into a nice square and slap on new Broadway cast recording. Easy, done, sold." Sometimes there's nothing at all, and they say, "Listen to it." In the Light is a great example.
Yeah.
Michael Motz In the Light that just came out had nothing, and they asked me. It was hard. They were like, here's what the show is about. We don't want it too graphic because we want directors to be able to put their own thing on the show. Go with God. And I was very stymied for a while. And I thought about it. What it's about is like the burning of Johann. Oh, God, what is his name? Famous guy actually lived. Faustus. His papers. Anyway, it's like a thing that happened. Because he's like a scientist of some sort. Listen, I'm not selling this, but you should listen to it. It's quite good and streams very well. Jeremy Jordan, Antonio Cipriano, Sierra Renee, amazing people. But they were like, it's about the burning of his papers. And I was like, okay. And eventually like landed on creating a design of like these sort of burning papers that runs through the whole book, because I wasn't allowed to use any, there's no photos from it because it's never been produced. And there was no logo or anything. So it was just like, go with God.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be exciting because you get to create, but terrifying because now you have to create it. And if they sometimes hate it,
yeah. Then... There's an album that I just wrapped, which is Burt Bacharach and Steven Sater's Some Lovers, which is only the second musical Burt Bacharach's ever written, mm-hmm. which is wild.
Yeah.
And they did not want the key art from the production that had happened used. And I went through, I want to say, 10 different iterations before we landed on what it became. And it's coming out. It might already actually be out. But it was so hard, especially because there were so many stakeholders who had their thoughts of what it should look like. And what is the show, you know? And it's very interesting to try to represent 2.5 hours of material with one image. What is it that makes you go, oh, I would like to listen to this, right? And for me, as a fan and a collector, I very much am like, how do I sum it up and make it feel like it's part of the whole narrative? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much an extension of that. And it's also interesting because a lot of design these days has moved the way movie posters have from, there used to be like these beautiful, like graphic images. And now it's like faces of people.
Yeah.
Right. What do you do with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how from a design standpoint, and how important do you think the front cover art is now? Because obviously when we had albums, it was hugely important, right? It is that big cover art. Then you had CDs, which are a little bit smarter. And now that we have, you know, only MP3s, or you just go to Spotify or iTunes or whatever, it's kind of like TV theme songs, right? They've kind of gone away. How does that work?
Yeah. So I think it's still wildly important because if it comes up, it's just like a book cover or like a menu, right? If your menu looks terrible and there's photos, like stock photos in it of like unappetizing food, are you going to order it? Are you going to go to a diner and order lobster? No, absolutely not. but why would you? It has freezer burn. Don't do it. But it is the first thing they get. Right. It's the very first thing, whether they're sitting in the theater and handed the playbill and what is it? Yep. You know, it is the very first visual thing that they get of the show. Even before they hear like the dun 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 dun, right? Before any of that happens, you've seen Cosette on a cover looking sad. With like papyrus or whatever font they use. Don't use papyrus.
Comic Sans, we know.
Somebody combined the two, and that's that person is actual Satan.
Note to self, I'm gonna do that.
so I think it's still important, and now, a lot of people who buy their albums on iTunes, they get like a full digital booklet with it. So a PDF of everything that is printed comes along with it. So at least they're getting the whole experience, but it's not the same as like holding a full thing, right? I'm holding up the Hair revival vinyl to the listeners because this is an audio medium.
The audio podcast has descriptive video.
Oh, great.
But we have somebody describe everything we just said and what we see. So
wonderful. So it's a lot of me sipping water and exactly.
Robbie gesticulating. Picks up a cup and sip. Right.
While I gesticulate wildly. Yeah. But so it's not tangible, which is what I love about cast albums, right? Yes. Those liner notes. And like I, growing up, I would pore over liner notes and playbills because the 80s playbills were basically books. They were 50 pages, mostly about fashion I didn't care about, but like interviews with playwrights and stars of shows and stuff. And they've since downsized because advertising doesn't sell as much as it used to. Mm-hmm. But that's like how I gleaned so much theater information.
Yeah.
And just, I was a sponge for it. So we still do for many things like actual physical CDs at Broadway Records. Mm-hmm. That did go down during the pandemic because a lot of companies that used to print CDs started to make PPE, which was wildly more important than a cast album of a musical you've never heard of. And eventually most of those will come to CD, but it's fascinating in the digital age,
you know,
because most people who have Spotify, et cetera, they have no idea. Broadway Records, we will put download digital book at the top. So in case that person who discovered, let's say Some Lovers, that's the new one. In case they discovered that because they are a fan of Lea Michele or Jennifer Holliday or something, go to find it, download digital booklet, and everything's there. The lyrics, the liner notes, the why, the synopsis, how do these songs fit in?
Yeah, I kind of miss I love the physical touching of the LPs and the CDs, even the cassettes. It's just, there's something about it that, no, maybe just because I'm old and I grew up with that. And sure. It's just something I feel I lost. And maybe, you know, people who.
But we are definitely like Broadway Records. We pay very particular attention to packaging because everybody who works there is a Broadway nerd. So we are very much like by Broadway fans for Broadway fans. Mm-hmm. And we've started doing vinyl because there's like this massive, even though there's a worldwide vinyl shortage, people still want their cast albums on the vinyl.
Yeah.
Great. But that also gives me so much surface space to play with. You know, so like for The Lightning Thief, I included every lyric. I can include huge photos and stuff, and also a QR code, which remember when those were invented and we were like, who the hell needs that?
Exactly.
And now I'm pretty sure that they are the reason we had the entire plague. The whole pandemic was by the creators of the QR codes because they needed to push that app.
It's true. Smart. Deadly.
That's just that's a theory, but it's a true theory. So but we include a QR code so you can, again, download the digital booklet because printing is so costly.
Yes.
You can't necessarily print every lyric or whatever. So that way you get that as well.
Well, I'd love to stay on the cast recordings because I understand that you're a Grammy voting member.
I am. Well, that is something I do.
So I'm curious about how it works for cast recordings. How does the voting work in the first place? And then we'll break it down to the cast recordings because obviously you don't listen to everything. And I'm pretty sure most voters don't listen to cast recordings.
Right. So now it's so specialized, right? That there's like a small, you cannot vote in every category, period, as a voter.
Okay.
There are like five overall that's like best song, best album, best recording, which is different than best song, because one goes to the song, right? Listen, plays should be like that too, because like best play and best script of a play, two very different things. There's like two others. And then it's a specialized field. So it's like R&B, and you can vote up 15 categories total, plus the main five. And then like R&B, folk, country, traditional pop, which is, you know, like where my album was shortlisted the year it came out. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Didn't win. it's like me and Barbara Streisand, weird year. but then there's like where comedy, audiobooks, musical theater, visual, like film soundtracks, things like that, they're all in sort of one category, and it's like specialized to the voter. So I can choose to vote in R&B, but I have to live in that field. I can, and honestly, like, yes, I do listen to every Cast album. I do that anyway.
Yeah.
Because again, I am a Broadway good nerd. But you know, I also feel like it's responsible of me to, you know, listen to everything, to in order to be fair. It's like Tony voters cannot vote in categories that they have not seen every nominee in, right? So like if there's four plays nominated and the voters only seen three, he can't vote in that category. Or if, you know, like there's a featured actor who was in something that ran for 16 performances, why? so the voter didn't see it, can't vote in that category. And it's sort of the same thing. I mean, there's sort of an honor system to it. And I'm sure there are voting blocks with like major labels where, you know, all of Sony's a huge like company, right? With hundreds of employees who are voters. And they say, you are going to vote down the party line. Sure. Okay. Listen, I think at the end of the day, the Grammys are fascinating because voters vote for names that they know.
Yes.
So like Jagged Little Pill, Alanis Morissette, or Kinky Boots, Cyndi Lauper, you know, they look for the names that they know. When we won for The Color Purple in 2016, fascinating on its surface, right? But I guarantee you they knew the name Jennifer Hudson, and that certainly helped it. Now, it's a spectacular album, and I'm so thrilled that it was honored. Who knows, like if it were up against, I don't know, Moulin Rouge or something that's got 800 songwriters who are all pop songwriters. Yes. It's a very interesting animal.
Yeah. And I'm always curious about that, how that works, because someone like yourself who's deeply into it will listen to everything. And,
sure.
But then there's other people who, well, they can't. Like I'm curious, how does a Cast recording get into the category in the first place? Is it open to anybody, or does it have to be put in?
They are submitted. So like we best musical theater album is the name of the category. Okay. And they are a fascinating category in general. Every category has to have at least 40 submissions in order to have five nominees.
Oh, wow.
And if it goes to, I feel like 27, 30 something, if it's under 40, between 27 and 40, it'll drop to three nominees. And if there are less than 27 eligible, category goes away.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And if it goes away for 3 years, say, the category is deleted permanently. So Broadway Records, specifically Van Dien, who is the president of Broadway Records, he works very hard with like independent albums who have like self-produced, et cetera, to say, hey, let me help you and submit you for the Grammys, because he's working so hard to make sure the category stays alive and that people are getting their due. You know, it's how cool, like, I knew when I released my semi-hit album, Songs from Inside My Locker, that I didn't have a snowball's chance, right? It was never going to happen. But to know that it was there and it was like people would listen to it and recognize the work that was put into it, that's thrilling for me, right? But also, he works diligently to make sure that the category maintains its integrity. There's like just a musical theater group that they meet. I'm not on it, so I don't know what their meetings are like, but they decide what is eligible, what is not, based on submissions. But like sometimes a play's music gets submitted and they'll be like, no, that is actually classical crossover. Like, so they listen to everything and make determinations based on that. But so far, that was me knocking on wood for the audio. So far, the category remains intact, God willing. And there were 63 eligible albums this year.
Wow.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yesterday was the last day of eligibility.
Wow. Well, you know what? That's fantastic that, you know, there's that support with each other to make sure it stays alive. And that's what theater should be about. You know what? It doesn't matter if you have an album, you have an album, because sales are important. But I think in musical theater, as collectors or listeners, I want them all anyways. So it's not really competition per se between albums. And it's so great that, you know, there's someone, you know, who's helping keep these alive.
He is definitely, he works very, very hard at that. So God bless.
And thank you for telling us this and the listeners, because we know all about the category of, you know, musical theater in the Grammys, but you never see what's behind the curtain. And I want to thank you. I'm always curious for giving us a little glimpse.
It's so cool. And the year I joined Broadway Records was the year we won for The Color Purple. And it was, what a day. You know, you're in LA, you're in a tux from like 11 in the morning because we're on what I call the shmammies. We're before the big concert, right?
Yeah.
You get there at like 11 and you have to go through like the metal detectors, whatever. And they're like, here, enjoy this buffalo wing. And you go in and Margaret Cho was like the host of the Shmammies that year. And she came out in a big Diana Ross wig, did an opening monologue, and we were the first up. And so we were on stage. You can truly, there's somewhere a Getty image that I was in New York Times, like, because we were the first category. There's a New York Times image of me fully having an aneurysm behind Cynthia Erivo, who's accepting on behalf of everybody. But I am losing my damn mind. And then we go off and there's like a press line, whatever. And it's also hilarious because my sweet husband, who is with me, like pulled out his, like, I don't know, iPhone 3, whatever, hit record and it's like shaking. And he's like, holy shit. He just keeps saying that over and over, as he like goes live on Facebook with it, but like amazing. And then we like stuck around. We watched Judy Collins sing from her Sondheim album. And then I was like, maybe we should go get a little something to eat. And so the Shmammies takes place in the Microsoft Theater, which is next to the Staples Center, but it's also sort of like a big outdoor plaza with like Wolfgang Pucks and stuff. So we ran, we got some pizza, and then we went to the concert, and there's Beyonce 9.5 months pregnant doing like that crazy dance on the chairs.
Yeah.
That was also the year when Adele fully stopped singing. When she was singing for George Michael and fully stopped and started over because something was wrong with the piano strings. Huh. Wild. What a night. It ended at In-N-Out Burger.
As most great stories do, I believe.
It should, honestly.
So do you have anything coming up that you want to plug? I know you do because we talked about your birthday, but is there anything you want that's coming up that you want to plug or promote anything like that?
Listen, go to BroadwayRecords.com and get some cast albums. They're really good. Like we strive very hard to release quality theater related albums. We do have some cool albums coming very soon. There's like a new Stephen Schwartz review that's coming called Snapshots. The Layman trilogy just came out from us, which is beautiful piano music from the play. And I, as you know, am a semi-hit cabaret icon in New York City.
Yes.
And I'm making my Birdland debut November 29th at 7 o'clock. Nice. Which is terrifying. But it's gonna be a lot of fun. And that's truly all I have to promote at the moment. Go stream my album, it's fun. There's some cussing on it.
That's okay.
I feel like I should warn some of you. But it's very funny. We recorded it at 54 Below. It came out last year during the pandemic, so it could use some love. Give it a listen. If you love classic show tunes, which is my jam, literally my jam, because Jam Tomorrow, Jam Yesterday, But Never Jam Today is the encore on the album.
Nice. So let me ask, why Birdland is more terrified than, because you've done 54 and Feinstein and all that stuff. Why that?
Birdland has such a history with like Ella Fitzgerald and Charlie Parker, and you can definitely draw a line from then to me.
Yeah, well, I was thinking that. I was just googling that, and
yeah,
literally a timeline.
You went, oh yeah, that makes sense. listen, it didn't make sense when I played 54. You know, I was one of the people to reopen 54 back in June, and it sold out in 26 minutes, which is shocking. And that was its own kind of scary. Like, do I remember how to do any of this? Truly, I really thought that we would all be a lot slower stepping out of things and just tapping our foot on the ice. And can we walk on this? No, we're just fully Bambi. Like, let's just see how this goes. Okay. Birdland, though, is scary because of its history and also because it's 7 o'clock and I am a 9:45 kind of guy. Like, I am a, you've had dinner and now you're drinking and you will enjoy what stupidity I'm laying down much better. And I feel like I can't curse as much at 7 o'clock.
So you're getting the PG show rather than the R show? Maybe,
who's to say? Listen, it's always the R show because it's the Robbie Rozelle show.
Nice.
Thank you. With my band, the Two Drink Minimum. it's a good time. But it's scary. And a new venue for me is scary.
Yeah.
Certainly. So there's a lot of unknowns, but I'm excited to do it.
That's very cool. Well, congratulations on getting in there and all that you've done and helping bring musical theater, you know, back after everything that's going on. And
oh, Jean-Paul, thank you.
No, you know what? We have to support each other in this industry and thank people when they do something like this. So yeah, I thank you for everything
you've done. Thank you so
much. So before we go, I always ask three questions of my guests. There are no right or wrong answer, but people might judge you.
Oh, good. Answers. So good. You know, I feel great about that.
That's their problem, right? Whatever they think. Yeah. Okay. So question number one, what creator or team within musical theater has had a great influence on you? You know, it could be a composer, a lyricist, director, producer, actor, stage manager, even. It could be somebody famous or not famous, like a teacher. Is there anybody who's had an influence on you? A good influence?
Yeah. Laura Benanti. I met Laura Benanti for about a decade. I worked with a record label called PS Classics. And in 2002, they recorded the revival of Nine, starring Antonio Banderas, who is famously about to play a 35-year-old at nearly 60 in a Spanish production company. Sure. But I met her. There was a CD signing of Nine at the Virgin Megastore, where I'm pretty sure somebody brought Jane Krakowski their own hair. It was weird, but it was also like Antonio, Cheetah, Jane, Mary Stuart Masterson, Laura Benanti. And I was down assisting, but I was, they know that I say things. So they did not have me up by Antonio Banderas. They had me down by Laura Benanti. And we fell in love with each other. I saw the show that night in house seats. She walked out on stage, saw me, and like let out like a laugh. Because she saw me, it was like the way the theater was lit in that moment. Yeah. And I called her out on it. We've been friends ever since. But I said, hey, you don't have a website. That's weird. It's 2002. And she's like, do you want to make me one? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we started doing that. And then and she would recommend me to people for years and years. And then in, 2015, I want to say 2014, a while ago, she called me and said, hey, I've recorded a live album. Would you design it? And it has to be in on Monday. And I was like, what? It was like Friday at 2 o'clock. And I was like, sure. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But it was for Broadway Records. And because of that, Van Dien discovered my work and hired me first as a freelancer and eventually full time. And here I am. You know, I've been with the company for almost 6 years. But again, all roads lead to Laura Benanti in my professional career.
Very nice. Very nice. Correct answer. One point.
I felt good about it. She did. She loves me for me. So like it all worked out.
Awesome. Okay. So that was question number one. 1 point. Points don't matter, but you get it anyways.
God, I hope I get a gift.
Well, and that's the end of the show then. I'm in musical theater. I got nothing to give.
Yeah, I make cast albums. We get paid with Chipotle gift cards. Tim Horton gift cards.
I've never been to Chipotle. I have to... So
see, I changed my joke just for Canada to Tim Hortons.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you're
Thank
welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, question two.
Question two. So you once played, I read, Charlie Brown and Frankenfurter in the same year.
That's correct. I have range.
Which did you play first in that year?
Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown. So when you were playing Frankenfurter later, did you ever slip into Charlie Brown as Frankenfurter?
No, but I slipped into Tim Curry a lot.
Who did you?
Yeah, specifically like Clue Tim Curry, because that's my weird gateway into Tim Curry is like the Clue film and also Home Alone 2. I have, of course, watched Rocky Horror many, 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 many times. Yeah. But like Clue is like that sort of movie you watch and watch and watch, right?
Yeah.
Charlie Brown, I had like created my own voice for and whatever. But Rocky Horror, especially when you listen to the cast album, it's so just Tim Curry all the time. Yeah. You know, like that thing. And I have like a weird gift of being able to pick up like vocal tics and stuff like that, and I slip into them all the time, and often used to be, and I've sort of self-corrected, if I was talking to somebody who had like an accent, I would just start speaking to them in that accent without knowing.
Yeah.
Like a male non-equity Christine Petty. Just that's what I would do. But yeah, and they're wildly different sings, you know, going from the kite to like the time warp, I'm going home, et cetera, is like, it was a mind trip. It was fun.
I'd like to see Charlie Brown play Frankenfurter.
What if all of the Peanuts did Rocky Horror?
That would be fantastic.
Right?
Somebody has got to do that. Got some kind of mashup.
We said it here, kids.
Yep. So.
Listeners, run with that.
So if we ever see it, we're suing.
I would just like a royalty.
That's a good point.
Right? So you can send me a Chipotle gift card to Broadway Records.
Me, Tim Hortons, please.
Right, yeah.
Correct answer. Answer number two. So question number three, we're going to really know who you are.
Yeah.
Food in the theater, cell phones in the theater. Which is worse?
Oh, gosh. Honestly, both for very different reasons. I don't have a... The problem with food and theater, when I first started going to the theater, they were not selling like bags of M&Ms and stuff like that. I feel like it was water and booze, right? There's always been booze in the theater. And honestly, God bless. Sometimes you need it. But... the problem now is the crinkly crank, crank, you know, like as they're trying to like quietly eat a Skittle, but that, which makes it 10 times worse. Because the slow unwrapping of a goddamn Jolly Rancher, which it's not, you're not helping. You're not as quiet as you think you are, ma'am. But talking, or cell phones, I have a humdinger of a cell phone story. So I was at a preview of Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike on Broadway at the storied Golden Theater. Mm-hmm. And wonderful, wonderful play by Christopher Durang and Sigourney Weaver and David Hyde Pierce, who is key to the story. David Hyde Pierce, and excellent play, right? David Hyde Pierce had just done a 5-minute show-stopping monologue about how you used to have to lick stamps and like everything was we're too disconnected because we had to do things, right? And it was a show-stopping monologue, clap, 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 that kind of thing. The play is going to end 10 minutes later. And as she finishes and the applause, he finishes and the applause finishes, somebody's cell phone goes off. 3 rows behind me. And the old woman answers it, right? And says, I'm at a play. And then the play's still going because like we don't stop.
Yeah.
Right. It happens again. And now like the audience is turning on this woman. And, you know, the first time it's like, oh, also how weird, because he just talked about cell phones and how they're damaging us. Second time. And the audience literally is turning. We're all like turning our heads at this woman and like tutting and whatever. And she answers it again. And I can't talk to you. I'm at a play. One more time it happens. Uh-huh. And she just lets it ring that time. So it's loud because old people don't know how to turn down their phone, which is very annoying. And then the play ends. Curtain call. Curtain call. And the curtain comes down. Richard Kind, who's 3 rows in front of me, bolts up from his seat, down the aisle, goes up the theater aisle and down the row to the woman who is maybe 4'7" and Richard Kind is a tall man,
yeah,
and is screaming in this woman's face about manners in the theater and how dare she have her fucking cell phone on in the theater, like going off. And honestly,
wow,
I've never felt more seen. So I want to say cell phones in theaters.
I accept both. So
I have another answer to that. Also a cell phone question.
Yeah.
Because there's something called the Toft Library here in New York where they film shows, okay, for posterity, and you can go to the New York Public Library and watch them. And there was a show called Rothschilds and Sons, which was a rewrite of Bach and Harnack's The Rothschilds that happened at the York Theater. The York Theater is famously in the basement of a church that is so far below ground, they do not get cell phone service. Really? So it's truly like being at a Walmart. There's just no service. So you're down there, right? Nobody checks their phone because it does not work. Everybody also, like, I bring down the median age of the York Theater from died 3 years ago to a sensible 87.
Okay.
It is the oldest audience alive. And they're filming the Rothschilds. Bob Cuccioli sings his big 11 o'clock song, hits his big note, and applause hasn't even finished, like started. And you just hear Siri go, I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that. Fully, loudly. And it is caught forever on the Toft recorded film of Rothschilds and Sons.
Oh, wow.
Turn your cell phones off. Turn them off. Turn them off.
Perfect advice. Thank you. Thank you. 3 for 3. Perfect score. Your Chipotle thing's in the mail.
Amazing.
Yep. So, but it might not get across the border because.
Weird. Oh, yeah. Weird. That's right. But, y'all.
I was going to come down to New York in a couple of months, but I don't think I was going to come down next month. And the
November.
Border's still closed.
Oh, God. And they're not reopening it?
I have no. That's on your side. So you guys can come up north, but we can't come south except by plane. We can fly down. We just can't go by bus or car or train.
That's weird.
Yeah, I know.
I don't understand anything.
Yeah.
Guys, just get vaxxed.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Awesome. Robbie, again, thank you so much for coming on today and introducing, you know, some listeners might not know who you are because we got listeners all over the world. I know, the surprise. They don't know me.
Weird, honestly.
But yeah, again, thank you for coming on today and talking to us.
This has been a delight. Thank you so much.
No problem. So we were just speaking with Robbie Rozelle. Thank you. Tune in next week as we will speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion that is musical theater. I'm your host, as always, Jean-Paul Jovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.